There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser will join us later on in the show. This is podcast number 292, July 16th, 2008. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From lawn ornaments to lawn chairs, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And of course, we thank Yahoo Ads. On today's program, Santander and Fernando to Ferrari. I quit F1 for Felipe. Are they serious about Formula 2? And, of course, Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi in the middle of the show. Steven, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
Absolutely outstanding. Had a wonderful Bastille Day. Had a baby guillotine. We were chopping up cigars and enjoying some good Cote d'Ivoire and an occasional Stella.
Which is you used that guillotine to slice your vegetables.
I didn't say vegetables. I said cigars.
No, I thought you used it to slice vegetables.
I said vegetables? I don't think so, Stephen. It was for cigars. But anyway, there you have it. The big news of the day. Stella buys Budweiser. Santander and Fernando possibly going to Ferrari for 2010. It looks like it's for sure. And when Santander speaks, apparently somebody listens.
2010, so that's another year at Renault?
Oh, absolutely. I think Renault is going to be outstandingly competitive in 2009 with the slicks.
Of course, Fernando will win a world championship with Renault and leave.
Exactly. That's the tradition over there. So I think a lot of teams are going to be competitive in 2009. Things are going to change. And as we know, Formula One is a cyclical competition, and Ferrari and McLaren isn't going to last forever. I remember in the old days when Williams was the dominant force, and everybody could wait till that was over. And now, look what happened. So, I think this is a sure bet. Santander went to McLaren with Fernando. Obviously, they expected Fernando to hang around a little bit more. But, of course, people weren't reasonable over there at McLaren and chased poor Fernando away. But on the other hand, what can you do?
What can you do?
Exactly. So Nasser just stepped into the studio. He's taking off his cashmere overcoat and now is sitting down. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Thank you very much. Cashmere overcoat and Kenyan tea.
Exactly.
Who could ask for anything more?
There is nothing more. And that's what we serve here at the studio.
Exactly. Hello to everybody. Hope everybody's doing well.
Excellent.
How is Mr. Faub doing?
I'm doing quite well, Mr. Nasser, how about yourself?
Surviving in the big city, woo-hoo, but loving it. And you, Mr.?
I concur. And loving it.
Yeah, you know, as far as this Alonso movement that you are talking about, this company, Santander, they bought a lot of banks. They bought Abbey in England. Both of them arrived in McLaren together, hand in hand, Alonso and Santander, but they are now losing interest as their man is gone. And my thing is that, Ferrari normally announces their lineup at Monza. I'll be surprised if Alonso is joining for next year, but I have a very strong, I'll bet that he's going to Ferrari in 2010. And the viscosity of the rumor has thickened as Spanish oil giant Repsol, who are heavily involved in rallying, is also on the Alonso to Ferrari bandwagon. So my dos pesetas is that this will happen sooner or later.
I agree. And not only that, but I don't think that Ferrari, even though I think Kimi Raikkonen is a fast driver, he's a great driver, But he doesn't have the dedication that Ferrari likes to see in a driver, i.e. the Schumacher.
Well, the dedication they got used to with
perhaps,
Schumacher.
Perhaps. I'm not sure. And Kimi Raikkonen, you know, he's already hinted that he's not in Formula One for the Rubinho long years, you know, the DC extended vacation years. Your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are I would love to see Fernando at Ferrari or in any other very competitive package. But, you know, like anybody else, I love a good race and a good racer. I want him to be with a good teammate, like a Sebastian Vettel. And then we'll find out who's who, if you know what I mean.
You mean
I'm not
uses?
Saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stir fry.
I think Fernando can handle it.
I'm not saying he won't be able to. All I'm saying, I want to see a, you know, I don't want to see a situation where, you know, hey, you're number two, you're just going to finish behind this guy all
no,
the time.
No, and I think Fernando will be fine at Ferrari. He speaks Italian. He's got the Latino machismo. So all that is wonderful. My problem is Ferrari going to be competitive in 2010? That's a long ways away in Formula One. Things change fast.
That is so true.
And well, especially with the rule changes next year, you don't know how anybody's going to really favor or fare once those come into play. You know, the slicks and the aero accoutrements that you're no longer going to be able to use are going to make everybody a little slower, some more than others, I'm sure.
Yeah, and of course, I think for every driver, Ferrari is a team every driver dreams of driving for because of the mystique. You know, they've been in Formula One since day one. And, of course, a Ferrari is a Ferrari. So I can understand that draw, that allure for anybody.
And the company car is pretty good, too.
I heard about that. They're not. You know, I think they're a little step up from the Renault Laguna.
Well, I see Michael Schumacher doing commercial for Fiat vans.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm sure he's not driving one.
No, I don't think so.
But, no, we'll see what happens. But, I wish Fernando all the best. But, of course, I will still be rooting for Renault. Not for Fernando once he's at Ferrari. So, the hombre muy macho de España will have to go back on the shelf.
What happened if Lewis Hamilton goes to Renault?
Ooh.
What will you do?
That's never going to happen.
What will you do?
He's like an indentured servant. He's written his whole life away to Ron Dennis and McLaren. He says he wants to start at McLaren and end at McLaren. So I wish him all the luck, too.
Yeah, we wish everybody all the best.
And we always do. That's what
when
we
his
do
contract
here
runs out and, you know, Red Bull throws exactly millions at him.
Let's quickly move on to Michael Schumacher's statement saying that he quit Formula One for Felipe, his Cupid doll. Steve, I mean, come on.
I almost fell out of my chair laughing. Come on. No way did Michael Schumacher quit Formula One for anybody but Michael Schumacher.
I never thought that Michael Schumacher was such a humanitarian.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. I would love to have been able to see his face when he made that statement.
Not only that, but he said he wanted to save Felipe's career.
What was Felipe to have been a teammate for
Not only that, but
year?
How does Felipe feel? I mean, it's almost belittling.
Yeah.
Ness?
If that is really the case, that speaks very well for Felipe.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. And that you're at Ferrari and nobody wants you. When I read this, you know, I said, okay, what's going to happen now? 3 days later, a statement will come from Willie Weber that Michael's words were misconstrued, which happens anytime something like this happens. So I'm going to wait 3-4 days and see what happens. But I don't buy that he quit for racing drivers. I'm only interested in one racing driver, and you, that is.
Not only that, but that's
man
the kind
in the
of,
mirror.
That's the kind of statement you hear maybe after the season's over. But, I mean, this can't boost Felipe's morale or confidence.
Yeah, not only that, but it's a statement you make in your memoirs, not to a reporter who's asking you about whether Hockenheim or the Nürburgring is the better venue for the German Grand Prix. Because the article I read, that was the first paragraph of the entire rest of the articles about the arrangement with them swapping tracks every other year for the German.
Exactly. I think it was just to get you to read the article, another ruse from the German press.
Bait and switch.
I don't know, but I thought it was a bizarre statement, and I certainly hope Felipe's feelings weren't hurt.
Oh, I'm sure Peter Vincent will be asking Felipe Massa and have another nice, you know, a confrontation with Felipe.
Yeah. How do you feel that Michael quit because of you.
But he was your teammate. He said that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure those two are still text messaging each other.
This text messaging is getting pretty big now.
Is it? No, oh, I don't do it, Ness. Yeah. But that's just me.
That's because you don't have a phone.
What's a phone?
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Stephen. Oh, a phonograph. Yeah, I got one of those. Quickly, the FIA and Formula 2, they're still serious. This is serious business. They are, I guess it's 400,000 now.
No, it's 400,000. It's already doubled in price.
Well, it hasn't doubled, but...
No, because he was saying 200,000 when he started.
Well, I think we're up to 400,000, and now we're in euros.
which means it's tripled.
But, I mean, how do you battle Bernie and Flavio on the GP2 thing? Because this is supposed to be a feeder series for Formula 1.
And where are the Formula 1 teams going to put their future drivers?
But they've already announced it'll be between April and September, 10 races. Your thoughts on this, Nasser?
Well, I think I'm calling this scenario Max and Miguel in bed. And this is not a new scandal. French manufacturer Miguel, these are the people who make the Formula BMW cars, and recently entered British Formula 3. They are reported to be in talks with FIA to make that $400,000 car per season for the Formula 2. I just cannot see how this can be achieved, because this is what it takes to get into entry level. And who knows, you know, Max may have a part of surprise on us, no pun intended, of course. The FIA, like you said, has announced there will be 10 races, and I really cannot see how this thing will work out. I mean, there's no way this thing can work out for whatever the amount they're talking about. You have to be around $1 million. You know, Formula Atlantics in the United States, which is basically entry-level. It's not entry-level, but mid-tier, I would say. That's about $1 million. You can do it for less, but if you have a, if you need a testing schedule and all that.
Or if you want to be competitive.
Yeah, it takes $1 million.
Well, even Formula BMW Euro Series is
much expensive. No, Euro Series, it's much more expensive than the Formula BMW Americas. And even the one here is over $400,000.
Yeah, so I don't see how they could pull this off. And the other thing is, the FIA is a sanctioning body over races. Mm-hmm. But how could they put together a series? Has this been done before?
No, they sanctioned the series, you know, like they...
Okay, then who's going to promote it? Who's going to... You know, ultimately, where are they going to race? Because Bernie's not going to let him race in front of a Formula One race.
Oh, yes, he will.
No, he cannot stop a Formula Two. Formula One is a FIA series, so they can do with Formula One. But I...
Well, who determines what support races are run at any given race?
Well, I'm sure it gets far more technical than just a simple answer.
Yeah, I think...
But if FIA mandates that there be a Formula Two race, it would be very hard to... not hold one. Again, depending on the contracts, you know, then Bernie is a very shrewd guy. He may have contracts with these. See, all these series, whether it's DTM or British Touring Cars or Paris-Dakar, all of them, even in the U.S., they are sanctioned. They are promoted by big corporations, you know, people with a lot of money invested in these things. So they will do whatever they can to protect their interests. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, Bernie may have a contract with Trax, that the weekend the Formula One comes here, okay, only these series will take place on that weekend. So he may, you know, so, do some sort of a preemptive strike.
So as Max, again, I can't see, as long as GP2 is in existence, I don't see how Formula 2 is going to, knowing that Formula 2, how is that going to be a feeder series for Formula 1 if all of the first class drivers whose next step is Formula One or GP2.
I think it's political, you know, and at the end of the day, the only solution I can think of is renaming GP2 Formula 2. And they want spec series. That's what GP2 is.
Yeah, it's a complete spec series.
And you really cannot have a Formula 2 series or any the last step before Formula 1. Such a big difference that drivers who come from that series are totally ill-prepared for the world of Formula 1.
Yeah. The whole thing, it almost seems like a way that Max is trying to get more money out of Bernie somehow or something.
You know, to me personally, the this notion of cost containment in motor racing is complete oxymoron. Motor racing, you go back 70 years. It just, no matter what era and time frame you're in, it just takes so much money that very few people can afford to go motor racing. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're always talking about cost containment, why don't they just make a rule, something like use the same car for two seasons? That will cut down costs quite a bit.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, it comes down to, as long as there's sponsorship money to be made by winning races, everybody's going to pour money into it.
Oh, yeah, it's a market-driven thing, you know.
Yeah, and cost containment, sure, you can put parameters in place, you know, the engine freeze, you know, spec tires. You know, if you really want cost containment, you go to spec chassis, because then the car basically costs the same all the time.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it's racing.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to pay top dollar to get a good driver. You're going to spend money to get sponsors. And when you have money from sponsors, you're going to have people working to develop your car.
And not only that, but GP2, which I think is very successful, A1 GP, which is really becoming really successful. And now with the advent of the new Ferrari car, which is apparently based on the F2004, those become feeder series. It's inevitable. So do we really need a Formula 2?
Plus, you know, there's another series coming in the world now, in Europe at least, Formula Super League.
Correct.
Where the football, I mean, it's amazing. Teams are saying market is so bad, we cannot raise sponsorship. Then you have all these series.
Exactly.
Well, that's part of the reason they can't raise sponsorship, because there are so many places for that money to go.
Yeah, and now they have, you know, they have Formula BMW, they have Formula Renault, they have Formula Masters. The Formula Vauxhall, Palmer Series, and it's just like, man, I mean, geez.
And Formula 3 is practically on every continent.
Yeah, every, you know, there's F3 German, F3 British, F3 Spain, F3 Italia, and then on top of that, we have F3 Euro Series. Then we have, as we were discussing before the show, Formula 3000 also, Euro 3000. So,
my God, I mean, Motorsports Mondial is going to be like 2 hours in a couple of years.
Yeah, but still with all the zeros in the check, that's the so sorry.
So sorry. But anyway, so we'll see what happens. But the only thing I don't like about this, like Steve was saying, is all that sponsorship money. I mean, this show knows a number of young drivers that are just looking so hard for sponsorship money, and they deserve it. And it's just going to make it harder for these guys to get that funding, which is not good.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, because, you know, there are several young drivers here in the United States. Alan Shuto is one name, John Edwards. These are people who are good, and, you know, you have to nurture these talents. You just cannot jump in a car and be world champion next day. That if they get the right opportunity, I mean, look at Scott Speed. I mean, if there was no Red Bull, he would have been washed away. Just because you don't have a big last name or a cute butt, you're going to get no press.
Yeah, but Red Bull can't pick up every young driver that has talent. I mean, they have limits. So there you have it. If there's anybody out there that wants to sponsor a driver, contact F1Weekly.com.
And or if they would like to sponsor a podcast on Formula One, contact us at info@F1Weekly.com.
I like his open mind. Always thinking.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. Real quickly, before we go to break, let's quickly talk about Hockenheim, Germany. Alemania. We've got Sebastian Vettel's home race. We've got Adrian Sutil's home race. Nick Heidfeld's home race. There's a lot of people's home race here.
BMW's home race.
Sutil. Well, talking of Sebastian Vettel, did you hear what Franz Tost, Scott Speed's buddy at Toro Rosso, said about Sebastian Bourdais? Or at least that's what he was quoted as. You know what he said?
He needs to find the gas pedal, I believe.
Yeah, he needs to find the accelerator. That's pretty brutal.
Yeah, it is pretty brutal, and he could have said it a little kinder. Because I think Sebastian Bourdais,
in his memoir, like Steve said,
Sebastian Bourdais had some good races. But Vettel, as Nasser Hamid predicted.
Did I not?
You did.
And so at least one prediction came
true. The check's in the mail, Nas. Keep up the good
work.
Thank you, sir. But no, you did predict that it would be hard for Bourdais at 29 to keep up with this young 20-year-old incroyable talent.
And I said that just because of past performances, you know. And I'll tell you, I'll make not a prediction, but this is my thinking, doesn't mean somebody's a bad person. I will not be surprised if this kid in a competitive car, you know, package is the most important thing. He might be more than a match for Lewis Hamilton, I have a feeling. And that's saying quite a bit.
I like that
for
answer.
A racing driver.
Machismo.
You know,
I agree. He's got a lot of talent, but yeah. Like Lewis Hamilton, he's got to get through those mistakes.
Yeah.
And maybe he needs to listen to Jackie Stewart, maybe get a coach.
Maybe stay away from Mark Webber. That might help.
Well, stay away from Mark Webber. Stay away from David Coulthard.
And yeah.
And David Coulthard is going to retire. So that means he's going to actually finish that many more races.
Yeah.
So that's good news for Vettel. But no, Sebastian is obviously a great talent, and they're talking about who they were going to replace. I mean, the Buemi, another Sebastian, just what we need.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on there, but it's something interesting.
Gerhard Berger said he's quick but inconsistent.
Exactly. So he wasn't ready for Formula One. Yeah. Exactly. But they've got other options, including Salvador Duran.
From Mexico, which was a surprise.
I was surprised to see that name as well.
And you know why you saw that name?
Why?
Yeah.
Because
the Telmex phone is ringing.
I mean, I think that's Carlos. Called pesos.
Yes, billions of Senor Carlos Slim is backing.
Exactly.
Him.
So, but I don't believe that Salvador Duran is ready. But he would be perfect for a testing role. A year, get him prepared. You never know.
Well, you know, my thinking on this when it comes to moving up a series. If you're racing in a junior series, entry level, or any series, and you're not even in the top five on a regular basis, and you hardly ever make it in the top 10, then you should not move up to another series. You know?
I agree.
I mean, we were talking, again, it's not an indictment of a person, but we were talking about a driver, Hamad Al-Fardan, from somewhere in the Middle East, and he is racing in German Formula 3, and he's done well in his part of the world, fine and dandy. And he is not very competitive right now. Granted, I think it's his first year, so maybe he needs another year to get up to speed and be competitive, which most drivers do take time, good drivers, that is. And now I hear that he is going to race in GP2 Asia. GP2 Asia is nothing but continental GP2 racing in Middle East. And you're not going to beat the likes of Buemi and what's his name, Hulkenberg, when he gets the next
year. I agree.
And jumping into a series like that, you're not going to do well, and it's going to be bad for not only your CV, but your mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Confidence.
And Bobby Rahal said this, and there's a guy who has won Indy 500 and championships, that the confidence of a seasoned driver can be shaken very easily, let alone a rookie. So that's very important thing that you bring up, Mr. Hodges.
Thank you. That's why I am the host.
With the most.
Exactly. Okay, now let's quickly talk about Germany. A couple of predictions, of course.
Yeah, well,
you believe it's going to be another Ferrari dominance?
It's going to be Ferrari or McLaren, and we'll see how the qualifying goes.
Ferrari or McLaren. You really go out on a limb here, Nasser.
Yeah, I know. And I think it will be Raikkonen or Hamilton.
Wow.
I have a question for you. Who would win a race first? Hamilton, his fourth this year, or Hecky, his first? Quiz of the day.
To be honest with you, I'm more interested in seeing Renault and Fernando getting to the podium in third place.
Next year, no problem.
I think this year. No, I think they could do it this weekend.
Is it supposed to rain? I would love to see a rain race. And I think Alonso can win a rain race.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's a professional in the rain.
Yeah, that he is.
Yes, but Felipe's not that good.
I won't even use the word good in the rain for him.
Okay. But anyway, so you think Ferrari will be able to pick it up? They need to not make any more mistakes. That's the key to this whole weekend, is Ferrari and mistakes. Because we don't care if Renault chooses the wrong tires, because they're not in contention for the championship.
I will not be surprised if it's a dry race and Massa wins, because this guy, every time he screws up, he bounces back very strongly. That I've noticed about him.
Huh. Call that the Brazilian bounce.
Yeah, the samba.
Yeah, exactly.
And his patron will be at the race.
Oh, yeah, the man who saved his career.
Well, I also think this is a big, big weekend, not only for McLaren Mercedes, but for BMW Sauber. We've got lots of German activity. The bratwurst will be flowing, and the Löwenbräu will be glowing.
Will St. Pauli girl be the pit girl?
She will be the pit girl, and she's welcome over here.
I'm sure she is.
But I think BMW is going to have a few updates in the aero package.
And they're going to pull out all the stops, because they would really love
to. Strategically, they're going to put out all the stops.
And try to get at least get a podium here in Germany.
And we got to watch safety cars and weather.
Remember, I think it was some years Nick Heidfeld was on pole with the Williams BMW package, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Possible.
Let me get the statistician on that, and okay. He'll get back with us after the break, Nasser. So anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with an outstanding Motorsports Mundial, which includes
a little Bastille Day goodie bag for the people who are interested in history of racing.
Clark Rogers, Fantasyland.
Exactly. So we'll be back.
We're going to let them eat cake.
And have it too. And bonbon also.
We'll be right back.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, brought to you by Nasser Hamid, the king himself of beautiful downtown Karachi. Nasser, welcome back to the studio. I hope the tea was soothing.
It is very soothing.
Excellent.
Well, greetings and racing regards to all the listeners from Sing Sing to Singapore. And that race is coming up in a few months, as you know.
In Sing Sing?
No, in Singapore.
Oh.
Sing Sing, they'll be watching.
They'll be watching. Yeah. On
they will YouTube. They will have a captive audience there.
Exactly.
Okay, we have a full flight today, so let's take off with the trip to the beaches of Holland and the seaside track at Zandvoort. DTM, German touring cars in action there. In qualifying, top of the grid was Swedish driver Mathias Ekstrom, and bottom of the grid was Ralf Schumacher. And you may ask yourself, what else is new?
That is sort of a sad state of. I mean, come on, Ralph. What's wrong with that guy?
I have no idea, but I just have a feeling that if his brother was there in DTM, this won't be the case. That's for sure.
That's true. You know what? I bet you I'm faster than Ralph.
Whoa. There's got to be some pride involved. Come on, you know the guy raced in Formula One for a number of years. You know he does carry the Schumacher name to be.
That's not carrying.
Does he just have a crummy car? Or
that's dragging the Schumacher name.
Yeah. Maybe you should get into drag racing, NHRA.
That's a good idea.
There's already a Schumacher there. You know?
I know.
Yeah, that'll be
Tony
perfect.
Tony Schumacher.
Something like that.
Yeah,
Tony. Or,
he's machismo.
Yeah.
He's actually been the champion a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ekstrom also won the race, second win of the season for the defending DTM champion. His fellow Audi drivers took the next three places. Timo Scheider was second, followed by Tom Christensen in third, and Martin Tomczyk was fourth. Canadian Bruno Spengler was fifth in his Mercedes. Ralph was 12th, just ahead of Matthias Lauda, another apple that fell very far from the tree. So sad. Katherine Legg was 16th. F3 Euro Series, a support race to the DTM. Now, you were talking about this promotion, Steve. My understanding is F3 Euro Series and DTM is both are promoted by the same organization. Nico Hülkenberg took victory in race one from pole position, third win of the season for the Willy Weber client, but not so fast. He was stripped of his win as his car was under the weight limit. Mika Maki, you remember this Mika Maki of Finland who had a big accident in his Nissan on the streets of Finlandia? He inherited the win. Jules Bianchi, whom we interviewed recently from France, was promoted to second. And British driver, your favorite driver, Sam Bird, lands his first podium in this series. Race two, victory for local driver Renger van der Zande. Jan Clare was second and fellow Francais Franck Mayeux third. And if I'm screwing up any names, apologies. British Formula 3 from Brands Hatch, rising Spanish star. Clark, this kid is also on my radar. I think this kid is doing very good. Spanish driver Jaime Alguersari won the race, first race of the weekend. Local lad Oliver Turvey was second, and Ate Mustonen of Finlandia was third. And Mr. Alguersari is a Red Bull customer. Exactly. Race 2, Mexican driver Sergio Perez held off intense pressure from 17-year-old Swedish driver Marcus Ericsson to register his fourth win of the season. Ericsson made a Swedish meatball of his efforts by spinning out on the final lap and losing a certain second place. Ate Mustonen was second with Oliver Turvey third. Winner from race 1, the aforementioned Jaime Alguersari was fourth. Now we move to British Touring Car Championship from Snetterton. Jason Plato led a Seat 1-2 in winning race 1 over Darren Turner. Plato also won the second race, and the third and final race of the weekend was won by Matt Jackson in a BMW. From British Touring Cars, we go to World Touring Car Championship from Estoril in Portugal. I'm not sure. Hopefully, Dr. Miguel was there. Maybe he can send us some nice pictures of Portuguese pit babes.
That would be swell.
Yeah, I know. Race 1, more success for Spanish manufacturer Seat as Swedish driver Rickard Rydell takes victory over the Chevrolet Lacetti of former Grand Prix driver Nicola Larini. Another ex-Grand Prix driver, Thiago Monteiro, delighted the local fans by winning Race 2. His Seat teammate Ivan Muller was second. Formula Masters, another of those many, many feeder, entry-level series, was racing at Estoril. Race 1, 19-year-old Swiss driver Fabio Laimer led the race from pole position to score his first win in the series. Chris Vandeerdrift from New Zealand of Dutch stock was second, and one-time F1 hopeful Michael Emmer-Müller of Germany third. This is a very strange case. Michael Emmer-Müller, if I'm not mistaken, won his very first GP2 race, and he was on the Red Bull program, was being talked about coming into Formula 1, and now he's in Formula Masters. I don't know what happened there. Race 2 saw another first-time winner, Vladimir Arabadziev of Bulgaria, and rumor has it that in his country they are calling him Senna of Sofia.
That's pushing it a little bit there.
Yeah, that's what he's trying to do. Okay. Australian Formula 3 from Eastern Creek, Sydney, Leanne Tender took her third win of the season by winning Race 1. She was second in Race 2, which was won by the Winslow boy, James Winslow. Leanne, who is married to V8 driver Garth Tender, is now joint leader in the championship with Nathan Karate on 145 points. Did you ever read Winslow boy?
No, I haven't, sir.
Oh, dear. I had to when I was in school.
Good for you.
Yeah, but the boy has asked for more. But anyway, moving on, MotoGP from Sachsenring, Germany, fourth pole position in a row for Australian world champion Casey Stoner. Did anybody see any of this action?
I saw a few tidbits. Outstanding. Casey Stoner is on a roll, unstoppable.
Oh, absolutely. This was his third win in a row. Rossi was second. Another Australian, Chris Vermeulen, was third. And next round, folks, is this weekend close to F1 Weekly's gigantic high-rise corporate headquarters at Laguna Seca.
Yeah, we could just get on the top and look down.
Yep. And we have a helipad also. anybody going there?
Yeah, I don't have to. I'll be right up here at the top.
Mr. Farm?
No, I'm not going to.
Okay. I might go there.
You should go. We need some interviews, Nasser.
You know, I tried last year to get the media pass, but the track said you have to go. You have to fill out a form and go through Dorna
series, the promoters, and that one.
Yeah, and then I went on their website. It was a little too late, which was only a few days ago. Then they have, you know, if you belong here, you apply here. If you have this, so I said, okay, no.
It's a test. It's some kind of mental test.
Yeah, ciao to MotoGP media. Anyway, but I'll take the recorder, our world traveled iPod, and if I run into somebody and he has 5 minutes for me, I'll do some interview. Now we come to Grand Prix de Genghis Khan. The Trans-Siberian Rally is now underway, and we had a nice picture of that on the web page, courtesy of Mr. Hardworking host of the show, Mr. Clark Rogers, exactly. In 14 days, the drivers will travel over 4,000 miles of forest and mountains of Russia and the vast plains and sands of the Gobi Desert. There are 20 Porsche Cayenne among 37 entries. Rod Millen, the LA-based Kiwi, won the event last year in a Porsche Cayenne. The rally will finish in Ulaanbaatar, the capital city of Mongolia. And I'm pleased to tell that, you know, this is how, you know, well-traveled our listeners are. You know, our listener, Dr. Kerry Beal?
Of course.
Yeah, and he and his wife were in Ulaanbaatar recently on a vacation. So greetings and traveling regards to the good doctor. And I think he's hitting the road again. Not the road, but the high seas again. IRL and Indy Lights, they were humming along in Nashville, Tennessee, your favorite town, at the this is a 1.33 mile oval, and they're calling this a super speedway. I don't know how that works. Anyway, Marco Andretti had another crash early in the race.
They go very fast.
Okay, once again, an open mind from the coast. Thank you, sir. Marco Andretti had another crash early in the race, taking out Ryan Briscoe. Rain stopped the race with victory going to Scott Dixon over Ganassi teammate Dan Weldon, and Castro Neves was third. Dan Weldon apparently got some very expensive dental work done. Have you seen him when he smiles now?
No.
Okay, check it out next time you get a chance.
Yes. Yeah, there's some really weird stuff going on towards the end of this race. I watched a bit of it, and they had a rain delay, and then I guess Briscoe jumped managed to get the lead during the restart, and the race ended like four or five laps later with rain again.
Yeah, they were hoping they can restart, but did not happen. Actually, what happened with Scott Dixon, who won the race, his team called him because most of the drivers had come in, and by the time they called him, he could not enter the pits, and on that very lap, it started to rain. So failure to communicate resulted in success on the track.
Raindrops keep falling on the track.
Okay, BJ. Okay, Indy Lights. This is another historic day. Another lady driver makes history. Ana Beatriz from Brazil, who likes to be called Bia, became the first female to win a race in Indy Lights. And this was not, from what I understand, was not on a fuel strategy.
Ooh.
We just report the facts.
Facts, ma'am.
Okay. Taking an impressive win in Nashville, she almost won the season opener in Florida. And our congratulations to Anna. And I would like to talk to her, you know.
I think we need to get this interview and photographs.
Yeah, she will be here at the Sears Point, or speaking commercially correct, Infineon Raceway. So if you get me a media pass, just a reminder, Mr. Host.
Then I'll get you media passes.
Please, and then I'll get there. And, you know, I would love to sit down and talk with Captain Penske. I'm really trying to get an interview with him for over a year now. Anyhow, American Le Mans Series from Lime Rock, Connecticut. First overall win for Acura. Drivers were David Brabham and Scott Sharp. Two Porsches from Penske, speaking of captain. His team, they were second and third. And have you heard the news that they let Brian Herta go, and many people in the team and the media also did not like that he got the chop? But
well, Brian Herta, I think, is at the end of his rope when it comes to high-speed racing. Nice guy, though.
Okay.
Yeah, we met him when we did the A1GP interviews.
Okay. Former BMW Americas, also in action at Lime Rock, Daniel Juncadella. Juncadella of Spain was the winner, so there is your muy macho hombre de España. He's from Barcelona, I believe. He's actually taking part in the Formula BMW Europe, but they can do, I think, two races in other series. So he came here and won the race, which is very good for him. But, you know, if you go to a different series, you can, whatever you finish, you don't score the points. Race 2 was won by Alexander Rossi from Northern California, a kid who we interviewed last year. NASCAR in the Windy City, which would be Chicago, Chicagoland Speedway in Joliet, Illinois. Kyle Busch and Toyota take the win over Jimmy Johnson in a Chevrolet. Seventh win of the season for Nevada native. On Saturday, he also won a Nationwide Series race. So he's having a real hot dog year.
Yeah, he's the Casey Stoner of NASCAR.
Yeah, yeah, and the guy is a very good racing talent.
I still don't understand why they let the guys who are racing in the Nexo Cup race in the Nationwide Series. How are you going to get anybody to move up if you've got all the big guys racing in the lower series?
Well, you know, it cuts both ways. In a way, it's good because if you are really very good, then you will be able to beat the big boys. You know, it's just like in the old days, Formula One drivers used to go to Formula F2. And that's how Gilles Villeneuve made his name. When some of the Formula One drivers, big names came, and he was kicking booty. Well,
apparently there's this young newcomer in NASCAR. His name escapes me right now.
Joey Logano.
Exactly. Yeah, he's like the Sebastian Vettel of Le NASCAR.
Yeah, exactly. And very special talent. And anyway, Tony Stewart checks out of Home Depot. Tony Stewart will be released from Joe Gibbs Racing Team at the end of this season. He will be joining Haas CNC team as owner/driver and will be back with the Bowtie Brigade, meaning Chevrolet. Tony is known as Smoke in racing circles and is originally from Columbus, Indiana. He was IRL champion in 1997. His longtime crew chief, Greg Zippardelli. In NASCAR, everybody has a nickname, and he's known as Zippy. And longtime sponsor Home Depot will remain faithful to Joe Gibbs, at least for the time being. Who knows what will happen down the road. And speaking of, you know, separate ways, Ryan and Roger are also going separate ways. Daytona 500 winner will be departing Penske team at the end of the season. Ryan may be the new man at recently announced Stewart Haas team, and the Haas in Stewart's team is currently a guest of Uncle Sam for some unpaid bills. Apparently, his calendar was not showing April 15th.
Keep up the good work, Nash.
He should have gotten Motorsports Memories calendar, and he would have had April 15th on it.
Exactly. Certainly. Or he should have called H&R Block Collect. But anyway, here's another one. I think you have a comment on this one. Sponsorship for Dale Jr.'s team torpedoed. U.S. Navy will not renew its sponsorship of Dale Jr.'s Nationwide Series team, which won a race this year with young Brad Keselowski. So what will happen to the Dale Jr. division they are advertising on Speed TV website?
Stop advertising.
How can the U.S. Navy not stick with Dale?
I don't know. Maybe the Army is marching in.
Not only that, but I think because Stella bought Budweiser. Budweiser used to sponsor Dale. I'm putting it in that circle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they like circles.
Exactly.
Okay, we already covered the Max and Miguel story. Alonso we covered. Okay, Ferrari versus McLaren. They are fighting not only on the track but on the legal circuit also. The teams have announced they are bringing to an end the various legal disputes between them. McLaren has agreed to pay Ferrari's legal costs arising from the actions which relate to the spying scandal of 2007. Courtesy of Nigel Stepney. Ferrari says that the money will be donated to a charity and they will continue their case against Nigel Stepney.
Poor Nigel. Haven't heard from him lately.
Yeah.
Send us an email, Nigel. We want to know what's going on.
Or a text message.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, next is Giorgio on my mind. GP2 championship leader Giorgio Pantano may be called by Red Bull to test for a possible seat in 2009. This is according to ItaliaRacing.net. Pantano is the most experienced and successful GP2 driver in the four-year history of the series. I am sure in peaceful dreams he sees the roads lead back to Formula Uno. That was a little Ray Charles remembrance spark.
Yeah, well, Pantano better keep dreaming.
So would he end up in Vettel's seat if he moves up to RBR?
Who knows what will happen? Somebody brings in.
He's not going to race at Red Bull.
No, their seats are pretty much filled if Vettel goes there because Weber is signed there, right?
Yeah, Weber's, and he's been confirmed. He's basically been confirmed.
And to be honest with you, I think Sebastian Bourdais will stay for 2009 next to the rookie, whoever they get next year.
Oh, he should. You know, he's doing a decent job.
He should be given.
But, you know, his contract ends at the end of the season.
I don't care. He's going to be signed.
Yeah.
I'll call Gerhardt myself.
Oh, yeah.
Frenchman.
You need to talk to Toast. Yeah, yeah. Well, he's another problem. Those Germans. Killing me.
Yamamoto yearning. Saccone is back in action, this time in GP2, replacing Italian Luca Filippi at ART. And so is Tracy. Pushy Paul will be racing in the Edmonton IRL. More money will mean more races and crashes for PT. But PT is a tremendous racing talent, and this is only a one-race deal. If they come up with more sponsorship, he will race more. But going back to Luca Filippi, I read something interesting late in the day. He is quoted as saying that among the problems he was having with his team is package was not good, they were having mechanical issues, and in his opinion, the focus seemed like was on the other driver, Romain Grosjean. Surprise, surprise.
I've heard that story before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a very common saga in motor racing. And it normally comes from the guy who is, you know, the slower of the two And when he goes to another team, he's again slower of the two.
Yeah, you always, it's never the guy who's the faster yeah. of the team saying that they're yeah. spending too much time with the other guy's car.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, the Ferrari GP, new A1 GP car, which, as you said, is based on the 2004 Ferrari Formula One car, is undergoing serious preseason testing in Italy and France. Both Luca Badoer and Marc Genet will also help in developing and sorting out the car. First official test for the teams will take place next month at Silverstone. And I think there's another test, which I believe is at Donington. Some teams will test at Silverstone, some at Donington, based on the availability of the new chassis. And Mugello will host the season opener a week after the Italian Grand Prix in September. I cannot tell you how tempted I am, but I don't think I can do this. Italian Grand Prix one weekend, the following weekend, Mugello A1GP first race.
Machismo.
Yeah. And I know, but talking of Italy.
Only 3 more days.
Huh?
It's only 3 more days.
Yeah. Our listener, Mr. Tom Walker, who was with me, we went, you know, we did some traveling together in Italy last year. He is on his way to Europa for some business, and he's hoping to catch a few Formule 1 on DTM events.
Good for him.
Yeah, he'll be working at CFD Magic somewhere near Stuttgart.
Yeah, that computational fluid dynamics.
Yes. Okay, DC to be daddy. His lovely girlfriend from Belgium, Miss Karen Minier, is expecting their first child later this year. Happy retirement, and just one question for DC. Pampers or Huggies?
I go Natural.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
From Carrefour? Okay. Finally, some sad news. You know, we met Paul-Henri Cahier. He supplied some photographs to my previous calendar, and we had dinner with him. His father, Bernard Cahier, passed away at the age of 81, one of the most famous racing photographers and also respected gentleman on the circuit. And he started covering Formula One in 1952. His son, Paul-Henri, carries on the great tradition, and their superb work can be seen at www.f1-photo.com. Bernard also worked for Goodyear and made a brief appearance in the movie Grand Prix. He was married to Joanne, an American lady from California. And his photo of Jim Clark flying in the Ardennes Forest towards his first Grand Prix win in 1962 is, in my humble opinion, one of the greatest racing images I've ever seen. And folks, if you want to see this picture, it was on the forum. I put this on the forum. You can go to their website, which is f1-photo.com. And if you click in 1962 or Jim Clark, you will see this black and white picture, car coming. And it's like a, you know, like a very focus on the car and the driver looking at the cameraman. Just a great shot. And F1 Weekly extends our condolences to the Cahier family. And that's the Motorsport on a Sad News.
Thank you, NASA, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And, of course, our condolences to the entire Calle family. Very nice people indeed. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with some goodies to celebrate Bastille Day and the French contribution to Motorsport.
L'automobile.
L'automobile de France. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. And now, before we go into the wrap-up, we have what you call a Bastille Day goodie bag, also known as La Marseillaise. Dansons la java, trou du cul du chat. I better stop. Nas, give us the good stuff.
Okay, thank you. Well, this goodie bag is shipped directly from Carrefour, The one on in Paris downtown?
One of my favorite stores.
Yeah, good for you. And you told me that the other favorite store is Facom in Paris. Facom, which used to be on
Renault. Facom Tools.
Yes.
Yes.
On the side of Renault.
I used to go to the Hôtel de Ville Bazaar, which is downtown. And in the basement, they have a little Facom booth. And I just like hanging out there.
I remember them from their days in the 80s when they were sponsoring.
My father gave me his Facom tool set.
Yeah, good. No Le Home Depot there?
No Le Home Depot. They're against the law.
Okay.
Sacrilege.
Okay, this is Bastille Day Goodie Bag. It's basically a look at some French drivers in Formula One. And because of time constraint, we cannot do more, but I'll mention a few other things. Most of it is related to Formula One. The first French driver to score world championship points was Yves Giraud Cabantou. He finished fourth in the very first Formula One race, the 1950 British Grand Prix at Silverstone, driving a Talbot Lago Talbot. And this name reappeared in the 1980s when Ligier team became Talbot Ligier. And I'm sure you remember that with the beautiful Gitan, you know, lady there.
Outstanding.
That's what I say. First French driver to appear on the podium was Louis Rosier. He was third in the 1950 Swiss Grand Prix in the streets of Bremgarten, also at the wheel of Talbot Lago Talbot. Same month, June 1950, sharing a Talbot with his son Louis Jr., he won the Le Mans 24-hour race, so which is pretty impressive. First, this was a surprise, I'll tell you that. First French driver to start a Formula One race from pole position. Now, keep in mind, Formula One started in 1950, okay? Don't look so sad, Mr. Host. Hard to believe it, it took 242 World Championship races and six wheels before we had a French driver on pole. And this was not until the 1974 Swedish Grand Prix at Anderstorp. Patrick Depailler, who came from Clermont-Ferrand, where Michelin is also based, shared the front row with his South African teammate Jody Scheckter. Order was reversed in the race with Scheckter winning and Depailler second, and this was one and only win for the six-wheel Tyrrell car.
One of my favorite cars.
Yeah, and I remember this race very well, long time ago. First Formula One winner from France was Maurice Trintignant when he took victory in the 1955 Monaco Grand Prix in a Ferrari, and it was in this race that Alberto Ascari went off the track and went into the Monaco Harbor.
Yeah, and he started a lot of the races at Monaco for years and years and years. Finished the races.
Yeah, he won the race one more time. That's in the 50s.
And then
he died a few years ago. He was in politics like Patrick Tambay now, living in the south of France. Okay, this you know, when race happened, I was very impressed, and anybody would be. Most impressive performance by French drivers in a race. The podium for the 1982 French Grand Prix at Paul Ricard was all Francais. Two Renaults ahead of two Ferraris. Arnoux was the winner against team orders over Alain Prost, so he had his own revolution going on there. Didier Prony was third ahead of his teammate Patrick Tambay. So four French drivers, first, second, third, fourth. Very, very impressive. And I'll be surprised if any other nationality has ever done that. I would be surprised. French Grand Prix winners include Maurice Trintignant, François Sivet, and Sivet, of course, his first and only win came at Watkins Glen 1971, same track 2 years later. He was unfortunately killed, which was the last race of the season. Jean-Pierre Beltoise, who was married to Sivet's sister, his one and only win came at Monaco in a PRM. And Patrick Depailler, a driver I was very interested in following his career, he won more than one race. His first win also came. A lot of French drivers have won their very first race at Monaco. His first Grand Prix win was in 1978 in a Tyrrell, four-wheel Tyrrell. Then we had our favorite Jean-Pierre Jabouille winning his first at where?
79.
Dijon Prenois. And René Arnoux, Alain Prost, Didier Peroni, Jean Alesi, Olivier Panis. And let's see who the next big thing from France would be. Could be Romain Grosjean, but, you know, some say he's Swiss. Patrick Tambay says he's Swiss.
So technically.
Technically. We'll solve that mystery soon. When I interviewed Grosjean, I asked him, hey, what's going on? Are you Swiss or French? He said French.
He knows where the cheese is.
Yeah.
I'm French when I'm talking to you, but when somebody wants taxes, I'm Swiss.
Yeah, exactly. His mother is French, though, according to Patrick Tambay. Okay, first French world champion. Alain Prost remains the first and so far the only world champion from his country. His first two championships were scored in 1985 and 1986 with McLaren Tag Porsche Turbo. Third title came in 1989, same team, but this time with Honda V10 Power. Final championship was with Renault Power at Williams, which was 1993.
Machismo.
And then he says, I don't want to defend my title because I don't want to be a teammate to a guy who has a yellow helmet.
Take it easy now, yeah, sir.
We only report the facts.
I understand.
You know, a little, coated with a little bit Clorox, but such is life. But, you know, there has been a lot of other French contribution to motor racing. Michelin is French, and we had Matra. I mean, that beautiful car I will never forget, the MS120 Special. And then we had Gérard Ducarouge and a lot of people, Bernard Dudot, Mr. Castin, François Castin. He's the one who brought Renault into Formula One with Turbo Power. So Michel Mouton. And of course, they have the Le Mans 24-hour race, the beautiful Pau Street race. So when we have more time, we'll do a little bit of more brown nosing for you, Mr. Rogers.
Next Bastille Day, maybe.
Yeah.
There you have it. Every Bastille Day, this will become a tradition. More Français information.
Yeah.
Okay, Stephen, you've got the forum, the F1 Weekly Forum newsletter updates.
I have the F1 Weekly Forum newsletter in my hands. And some of the highlights in this current one, check it out. It's on the forum, in the forum newsletter thread. It starts off with Ye Says, a new regular feature in the newsletter. Some news in brief about the particularly Massenets are gaining some support, even though Felipe had some challenges at Silverstone. A little bit of a blurb from Dr. Mark and Tricky Dicky, who were both at Silverstone. A little bit about Koala's generous pledge to bring Rubinho, the four-legged version, to England. Some updates on how I love to live in the countryside thread. This is the most massive post in the history of the forum.
I believe almost 45,000 views.
Yeah, and it's like 1,500 to 2,000 posts. Then the update on the predictions competition, is being led by Apex Slide with 323 points. The monthly Pit Babe, a Tricky Dicky timetable. I guess Tricky is traveling in Europe, and some news and announcements to wrap it up.
You know, talking of Pit Babe, I go to a lot of racing websites, French, Italian, German. You know, a lot of time they have different information. There is one constant, whether you're on a Russian or a Bulgarian or German, American, Canadian website, there is always a button for Pit Babes.
F1 Weekly doesn't have a button for Pit Babes. You have to go to our forum for Pit Babes, because that's a more personal, interactive kind of thing. So there you have it, Nas. And I suggest to everyone out there listening, if you haven't been to the forum, go sign up. It's a lot of fun. And our forum is clean and friendly. There are no flamers or whatever you call it. Am I wrong, Stephen?
No, we're very friendly. Your opinion will not be doused with gasoline and lit on fire. Everybody on the forum has their opinion, but everybody's willing to listen to others. And basically, you may be challenged once in a while, but it will be in a polite and friendly manner.
Nothing but an intellectual exchange about motorsports. That's what the F1 Weekly Forum is.
Or living in the countryside.
Exactly. Keep up the good work, Stephen. Thank you very much. Nasser, I believe you have an email that you'd like to read, or have you decided to give it to moi?
You and your broadcast voice, please.
Exactly. Okay, here we go. Hi, Nasser. Since you are the only one keeping tabs on MotoGP, I'll ask you this question. I was wondering what your opinion is of the pinnacle of two-wheel and four-wheel motorsports, Formula One versus MotoGP. I feel MotoGP has much more traditional rules and no silly minimum engine or gearbox regulations. This is good. I feel it is pure racing and more exciting than Formula One at the moment. Your thoughts on whether the rider in MotoGP has more impact on his result than an F1 driver can in modern Formula One? I hope to hear your answer on upcoming podcast. Regards, Alan O'Brien. Nas, your rebuttal.
No, it's not. Just asking me a question. Alan, thank you for listening and writing. I'll tell you, this is just my personal opinion. Like Schumacher in 2005, looks like Mr. Rossi. Senor Rossi lost the championship last year because of tire situation. But this should not take away anything from the efforts of Ducati and Casey Stoner. So, but, you know, package is crucial in winning, whether you're on two wheels or four wheels. And Alan's real question is, who has more impact on the result, MotoGP rider or Formula One drivers? Well, with all my love and passion reserved exclusively for Formula One, I must face racing reality and say that the MotoGP rider has more impact, and he's definitely more machismo than a Grand Prix driver, who is afraid even to talk to fans. And again, we're putting just the facts. And all you have to do is watch the tumble and the high-speed slide Danny Pedrosa took Sunday in the German Grand Prix, and the flights Jorge Lorenzo. I've seen Jorge Lorenzo more in the air this year than on his bike, which is his rookie season. And what really opened my eyes to all motorcycle racing about 20 years ago, I was with a professional racing driver, and we went to the San Jose Mile, the dirt track we used to have, not too far from here. And I think the riders and those big riders were Chris Carr and Scott Parker, and it was there that when the race started on the 1 mile dirt, both my friend and I, we were just looking at each other. I could not believe how, you know, machismo this thing was. And this driver said to me, "I can't do this. These guys are nuts." So I have a lot of respect for motorcycle riders. And, but what I said is just my personal opinion. I do enjoy watching it a lot. I mean, in the rain, you should have seen all these people, you know, just sliding and, you know, turning to the left, right. Very, very impressive. What about you, Mr. Fab and Mr. Auger?
Well, you know more about MotoGP than I do, but I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the riders are much more at risk in MotoGP. Yeah. I mean, you do see them flying off the motorcycles, and their impact towards the results of the race are definitely, I think, twofold.
You know, Monocotte and... in motor racing, definitely a completely different breed of animal, and you've got to give the driver, the rider, more of the credit. The bikes are pretty even as far as, you know, their ability. You know, you pretty much, there's not a lot of technology in a motorcycle as compared to a Formula One car, so the rider has a great deal more impact. And this guy's got, like your friend said, those guys are a little nuts.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this. You remember the guy, Randy Mamola, motorcycle rider? He was here from Santa Clara, California. This was the Italian Grand Prix. I don't remember the year, but it was mid-80s, 86, 87. And I met him maybe a week after this race. There was a highlight which you can see on YouTube, or if you see old clips. You know, the old chicken at Monza, it used to be, you know, like a couple of S's small. He's coming there, and in the S's, just before or just after, he is totally off the bike, full speed, and he has his two hands on the handlebars, and this guy is like running with the bike, and he climbs back and takes off. And I just could not believe that. And you can see this, sometimes they show on highlights, you know. So MotoGP, motorcycle racing is incredible talent as far as I'm concerned. But I still love Formula Uno more.
Thank you, Nass. That was a legitimate question from Mr. Alan O'Brien. And if there are any other people who have motorsports questions, historical tidbits they want to discuss with Nasser, don't hesitate to email Nasser here at F1Weekly.com. Let's go quickly into the wrap-up. I want to thank San Francisco Formula One Group. They're having another wonderful meeting over at Overtime Sports Bar and Grill. You can check them out at www.sff1.com. Get the details. You can also call the Overtime Sports Bar and Grill, 398 7th at Harrison, area code 415-863-1688. They'll be there Sunday, July 20th. The flag drops at 10 a.m. in beautiful downtown San Francisco. I'd like to mention our MySpace site, myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I'd like to thank everybody who makes this show possible. Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast. reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.